elders have asked me to preach on a variety of topics dealing with why we do and why we do not do certain things. This morning, we're going to consider why we do not use musical instruments in worship. In making the case against using musical instruments in worship, some people appeal to history. They appeal to prominent scholars and theologians. I could read lengthy quotes from encyclopedias and from eminent historical scholars talking about the fact that it was hundreds of years after the New Testament was written before the first musical instrument was brought into what is commonly called Christian worship. It was first introduced in the Catholic Church around 600 to 800 years after the New Testament was completed. And then another 600 to 700 years later, when the Protestant denominations came into existence, it was an issue that they wrestled with as well. I could read various quotes from prominent Bible scholars from different denominations, Methodist, Presbyterian, and others, who expressed their absolute opposition and sometimes even disdain for using musical instruments in worship. But we shouldn't have to appeal to scholars and historians and theologians to determine what is right and wrong regarding what the church is authorized to do in following and in worshiping God. I want to make this study about the resource that everybody should have at their disposal, the Bible. Three times in the New Testament, Christians are instructed to sing. Ephesians 5:19, speak to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. Colossians 3:16, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. And James 5:13, is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. Is anyone cheerful? Let him sing songs of praise. Now I will read the New Testament passages that instruct Christians to play musical instruments in worship. Now that we've done that, we're going to take a few minutes to consider some of the arguments that are used to justify using musical instruments in worship. One of the most common arguments to justify using instruments in worship is that the Bible doesn't say not to. The Bible doesn't say not to use musical instruments in worship. And that's exactly the argument that Nadab and Abihu could have used. And we remember how that worked out for them. In each of the two previous lessons in this series, I've mentioned the account of Nadab and Abihu found back in Leviticus chapter 10. It reads, Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer or incense burner, put fire in it and laid incense on it and offered unauthorized fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them to use. Notice it doesn't say he commanded them not to use it. He just didn't command them to use it. And fire came out from before the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. When God tells us what to do, he doesn't have to give us a list of all the things we are not to do. There's no end to the list of things God did not specifically tell us not to do. Imagine if people use this kind of reasoning in everyday life. You take your car to get the oil changed, and you arrange to pick it up the next day. When you go back to pick up your car, the guy looks at you and says, that'll be $1,500. Obviously, you're shocked, and he explains, I put on four new tires, I put in a new battery, I aligned the car, I gave it a tune-up and changed all the belts and made a few other minor repairs. And you say, but all I told you to do was change the oil. He smiles and says, but you didn't tell me not to do those other things. That's the argument. It seems that people only use such reasoning when it comes to matters of a spiritual nature. Another argument that's made to use, made to justify using musical instruments in worship is that there's nothing wrong with playing musical instruments. Remember Mark 11:15 through 19, where we were told that On reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple courts, began driving out those who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves, and he would not allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple courts. And as he taught them, he said, "Is it not written, 'My house will be called a house of prayer for all nations,' but you have made it a den of thieves?" There's nothing wrong with playing musical instruments, per se, in and of itself, just playing a musical instrument. And there was nothing wrong with selling animals. There was nothing wrong with changing money to the proper currency to pay the temple tax. There was nothing wrong with carrying merchandise from one place to another. But Jesus said it was wrong to do those things in the temple area. Just because something is not wrong in itself does not mean that it's okay to do it in the church building or in worship. Then it's sometimes noted that some people have a talent for playing musical instruments. They're simply using their talent to honor God. If being talented at something authorizes you to display that talent in worship, you could justify using your talent in almost anything. Juggling, martial arts, gymnastics, building Legos. Again, the list would be endless. And don't think that's far-fetched. There are churches who've had people do those very things in the church setting. Somebody says, "What about the parable of the talents?" A talent was a measure of weight. A talent was a bag of silver or gold which weighed about 75 pounds. This is why some modern translations don't even use the word talent in the text. Instead of saying 5 talents, they say 5 bags of gold or silver or 5 bags of money. The parable of the talents has nothing to do with using one's talent to do anything. Some people say, "Music makes me feel close to God. How can this be wrong?" Those in Matthew 7, 21 through 23 seem to have felt they were close to God too. But Jesus said, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, didn't we prophesy in your name? Didn't we drive out demons in your name and in your name perform many miracles?' Then I will tell them plainly, 'I never knew you. Away from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" Another argument says that I simply prefer musical instruments with the singing. Well, since when does a servant's personal preference trump his master's will? It seems that, again, Nadab and Abihu preferred using the fire that they used instead of what the Lord told them to use. And again, we see where that got them. The Bible is filled with such examples, and the New Testament is filled with statements and examples of people choosing to suffer for doing what is right rather than to follow their preference and not suffer for it. Jesus preferred not to go through the suffering on the cross. But in his prayer in the garden, he said to the Father, "Not my will, but your will be done." If personal preference overrides God's will in one matter, why should it not override God's will in every matter? Someone whose service to God is based on doing what they prefer is not serving God at all. They are serving themselves. Then someone says, "I just think you're making a big deal out of nothing. I don't really think God cares whether we sing with just our voices or whether we worship him with a praise band. The important thing is that he's being worshiped." Once again, Nadab and Abihu would probably have said the same thing. "You're making a big deal out of nothing." Unleavened bread and grape juice were used for the Passover. And that's what was used when the Lord's Supper was instituted, and that's what continued to be used. But I would prefer to have cookies and milk for the Lord's Supper. So let's consider some of these arguments in justifying using cookies and milk for the Lord's Supper. First, there's nothing wrong with cookies and milk. Second, I like cookies and milk, and so I prefer cookies and milk. Third, I know some people who have a real talent for making cookies. Fourth, God wants us to enjoy worship, and I would certainly enjoy cookies and milk more than unleavened bread and grape juice. And finally, it should be okay to use cookies and milk for the Lord's Supper, because guess what? God didn't tell us not to. It should be noted that there's just as much New Testament authority to use cookies and milk for the Lord's Supper as there is to use musical instruments in worship. Then some insist that musical instruments are used in heaven, and so it's okay for the church to use them. Revelation 15, verses 2 through 3 says, I saw something like a sea of glass mixed with fire, and those who were victorious over the beast and his image and the number of his name standing on the sea of glass, holding harps of God. And they sang the song of Moses, the bondservant of God, and the song of the Lamb, and it continues. Whether or not something is done in heaven does not determine whether it's authorized for worship in the church. If we can do something in worship because we can read about it in the book of Revelation, what about the sea of glass? What about beasts? What about golden bowls of incense in chapter 5, verse 8? And in chapter 19, verse 11, we read about horses in heaven. If God had wanted us to use musical instruments in worship, all he had to do was have Paul write in Ephesians 5:19, speak to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and playing musical instruments. That's all he had to do. And playing musical instruments to the Lord. But that's said nowhere. Some claim that the instrument is only an aid to singing. It's an aid and not an addition. The word aid means to help, to assist, or to support someone or something in the achievement of something. An aid simply helps you carry out something you're trying to do. For example, a cane is an aid to walking. When one is using a cane, they're still only walking. They're not walking and caning. They're just walking. The cane is just an aid. But if someone juggles while they're walking, they're now walking and juggling. Juggling is not an aid to walking. It's an addition. We're commanded to sing. Aids to help in singing would be a pitch pipe so you can get the proper pitch, songbooks so you'll know and understand the words as you sing them, and sometimes maybe a PA system to amplify the voice. While using those aids, one is still only singing. You're not singing and pitch piping. You're not singing and song booking. You're not singing and PA systeming. You're just singing. But if we also play a musical instrument while we're singing, we're no longer just singing. We're singing and playing. Musical instrument is not an aid. It's an addition. If there was a single passage in the New Testament which authorized using musical instruments, there would be no need for any of these arguments that we've just talked about. All you have to do is turn to the New Testament passage and says, right there it is. You don't have to go through this litany of didn't say not to and all those other things. I prefer it and it makes me feel good. There's a Greek word found in Ephesians 5, verse 19, which is most commonly translated make melody or make music in that passage. The word is psallo or psallo, whether or not you pronounce the P. Some argue that this word means to play a musical instrument. We could spend 10 minutes reading from Greek scholars and lexicographers regarding the meaning of psallo, or we can just read how the translators of the major Bible translations rendered the word. The majority of people who read their Bible will never read a Greek dictionary, but they will read from one of the major translations. In the New King James Version, Ephesians 5 and verse 19 instructs us to speak to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody, there's the word, in your heart to the Lord. First of all, notice that this is a command. It's a command to every Christian in the congregation. So if the command is to sing and make melody on a musical instrument, then guess what? Every Christian in the congregation must not only sing, but every Christian in the congregation must also play a musical instrument. The text would demand that. And if salo means to play a musical instrument, then the churches in the New Testament and the churches for hundreds of years were disobedient to Christ because they did not use musical instruments in worship. It's quite odd that neither Paul nor Peter nor any other New Testament writer reprimanded the early churches for their disobedience. I'm going to read this portion of Ephesians 5:19 from five of the most highly regarded Bible translations. 43 more Bible translations render this passage the same as the five I'm going to read. That's 48 different translations, almost identical. But as I read these texts, the question we want to answer is, make melody in what? Or with what? Or make music in what? Or with what? Ephesians 5:19, the King James Version says, singing and making melody in your heart. Not on a musical instrument. Singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. The New King James Version, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. The English Standard Version, singing and making melody to the Lord with your heart. New American Standard Bible, singing and making melody with your hearts to the Lord. New International Version, sing and make music from your heart to the Lord. Not a single one, and in 48 others, and even more than that. Nothing about a musical instrument. Paul says you are to make melody or make music in your heart, with your heart, from your heart. And again, not with a musical instrument. And finally, what is probably the most prominent argument used to support musical instruments in New Testament worship is that it's okay to use musical instruments in worship because they used them in the Old Testament. What is so ironic about this argument is that the argument itself is an admission that there's no place in the New Testament that authorizes musical instruments. And why would you need to appeal to the Old Testament if something's in the New? The argument also demonstrates either an egregious lack of understanding or a dangerous disregard for the distinction between the Old and New Testaments. Yes, they used musical instruments in the Old Testament, and they also sacrificed idols. Sorry, animals. That should have been animals there. They sacrificed some idols, too, occasionally. But they also stoned people to death for various sins in the Old Testament. But I've never known of anyone trying to bring back the sacrificing of idols. I've never known of anyone insisting that we should stone people for failing to keep the Sabbath or for committing adultery because they did these things in the Old Testament. When people are determined to do what they want to do, they will find some way to justify it. The old law, the law of Moses, was given to the Israelites on Mount Sinai. It was a national law for the Jews. It was never intended that this law would be taught universally. The old covenant was an agreement between God and Israel. The Israelites were required to obey God and keep the law. And in return, the Lord promised to protect and bless them. In Deuteronomy 30, verse 16, Moses said, I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him, and to keep his commands, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. The old covenant was never meant to be a permanent law. It was only temporary. Hebrews chapter 8, verses 6 through 9 says, the ministry Jesus has received is as superior to theirs as the covenant of which he is mediator is superior to the old one, since the new covenant is established on better promises. For if there had been nothing wrong with that first covenant, no place would have been sought for another. But God found fault with the people and said, and then he quotes from the Old Testament book of Jeremiah, written about 600 years before Jesus was born. He says, "The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the people of Israel and with the people of Judah. It will not be like the covenant I made with their ancestors when I took them by the hand to lead them out of Egypt." The old covenant was put into effect by the shedding of the blood of animals. And it came to an end when Christ died on the cross, shedding his blood for all people, putting his new law, his new covenant into force. Hebrews 9, verses 15 through 18 says, "Christ is the mediator of a new covenant, that those who are called may receive the promised eternal inheritance. Now that he has died as a ransom to set them free from the sins committed under the first covenant." In the case of a covenant or a will, it is necessary to prove the death of the one who made it, because a will is in force only when someone has died. Never takes effect while the one who made it is living. This is why even the first covenant was not put into effect without blood. The New Testament says that anyone who seeks to go back to the old law is not only indebted to keep the whole law, but also to seek to be justified by the old law is to reject Christ. In turning back to the law of Moses, you are saying that Christ and his law, those together, are not enough. Paul said in Galatians 5, verses 3 and 4, "I testify again to every man who has himself circumcised." That is, if you seek justification by keeping one part of the law, Paul goes on to say that he is obligated to keep the whole law. So you want to go back and get musical instruments? Well then, bring in the animal sacrifices, bring in the stoning people to death, bring in all those other things as well. Paul goes on to say in verse 4, "You've been cut off from Christ. You who seek to be justified by the law, you have fallen from grace." The Old Testament is filled with examples, principles, and truths which we can learn from. But if we seek to justify our practices in Christ by the old law, we reject Christ. We are saying that Jesus is not enough. Once again, in Matthew 7, verses 21 through 23, Jesus said, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?' Then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" The word lawlessness means without law. Means there's nothing written in the law that authorizes such activities. There is no authority in the New Testament for using musical instruments in worship to God. Therefore, it is without law. It is lawless. One online source says that Christianity Today magazine is an evangelical Christian periodical founded in 1956 by Billy Graham. Christianity Today has a print circulation of approximately 130,000 and a readership of 260,000, as well as a website at christianitytoday.com. Christianity Today magazine, this is a disclaimer, is an interdenominational magazine that has no affiliation with Churches of Christ. Just want to point that out. So I'm not appealing to it to back up something. In fact, it does the opposite. That's my purpose in reading it. When doing research for this lesson, I came across the following article on their website. I'm only going to read portions of it. Title of the article is, "When Did Churches Start Using Instrumental Music?" It was written by someone named Alicia Kaufman. "When did churches start using instrumental music?" she asks. "Are there churches today that still only use a cappella music, that's singing without instruments?" She says, "Though we know that early Christians sang during worship, they probably used no instruments." That's saying it kindly. In the next paragraph, she says, "Then in the next paragraph, unaccompanied vocal music continued to be the norm in Christian worship for centuries. She says, then in about the 10th or 12th century, Western Christians began to use the organ in the worship service. By the 15th century, organ music was widely accepted in the Roman Catholic West. She then tells about how later the Protestant churches struggled with how to deal with the issue. And then she says a few Western churches, such as Churches of Christ, still avoid using instruments in worship. She says these churches tend to employ primitivist arguments like that. She could have used purist, but that's okay. She says because there's nothing in the New Testament about instruments, and because the early church almost certainly didn't use instruments, so we shouldn't either. That's the reasoning that she says that those individuals use. Then she says, churches that do use instruments tend to find support in the Old Testament, and they tend to argue that while the New Testament says nothing positive about instruments, it also says nothing negative either. This article was written to inform regarding the history of musical instruments in churches, but it's also a subtle defense of the instrument in worship. Only two things the writer mentions in trying to defend the use of musical instruments. Both are found in the last sentence that I just read. She said, churches that do use instruments tend to find support in the Old Testament. And then she said, churches that do use instruments tend to argue that while the New Testament says nothing positive about instruments, it says nothing negative either. That's just another way of saying that there's no authority for musical instruments in the New Testament, but God didn't say not to use them. Elisha Kaufman just admitted to more than 250,000 readers that the two strongest arguments for using musical instruments in worship are that they did not use them in the Old Testament, that they did use them, sorry, in the Old Testament, and that God didn't say not to use them. She just admitted that there's no authority in the New Testament for using them, and that means they are not lawful. That means that to use them is to practice lawlessness. We can determine to find arguments to try to justify doing what we want to do in service and in worship to God, or we can simply humble ourselves and be content with doing only what God says in His Word. May we choose the latter. Let's sing the song that's been selected. What's the number, please?